All right, Tom, we are on the record for After Talk. Brian ran out immediately after the show to take a call, so he may be back, he may not. So we'll find out. Man, you know, Tom, I'll tell you what. Hannibal is so good that it is very difficult for me. Every week I'm like, Hannibal is so good, I would like to watch more of it. And I start to weigh, well, if I just binge it, will they know? And I think because there's such a mystery to it.
Yeah.
It never ends up winning out.
You would find yourself not able to talk.
Right.
Because you'd be like, oh, I know the answer to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think it's such a great show. I think it's been so good. I think I'm really glad that we're doing it. I'm glad we picked that.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the fact that they think LA will go to minimal restrictions by the end of the month.
Wow.
Because of the rate of vaccinations.
Yeah. We have had a pretty, it seems like vaccinations in America are very fast. You know, I'll say this. I got my first shot last week. Some friends of mine online, were actually planning to have a little Austin get together last year when everything kind of broke down. And now the thing that's holding us up is we've got some Canadian friends in that circle. And Canada has not been as...
they're not making as much progress right now.
Right. And so it's very tough because it's like, oh, you know, I want to celebrate that I got the shot and I'm seeing the process and everyone, they're opening up availability. And then it's very tough because I have friends who are like, well, we live in the Commonwealth and we don't know when we're going to have our time. And it's very unfortunate. So I don't know. Hi, Brian.
Yo. Are we after?
We're after talking.
So for anybody who missed it, Bonnie called like just as we were wrapping up spoiler in time. And so I did that thing where I did not stop talking, but I just hit answer and hope that she understood from context that she's hearing the show happening live.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then she hangs up. And so as soon as, you know, we catch a break, I run out and I call. And I'm like, sweetie, what's going on? I figured you know I'm live. And she goes, yeah, I never know when you're live. whatever. And I was like, well, what's going on? She's like, I don't know. I just wanted to talk. NBD.
Must be an emergency. You've interrupted spoiler in time.
Oh, man.
Spoiler, it wasn't.
Did you watch Prospect, Brian?
Prospect.
The Western in space. The one about the guy and the daughter is a movie I mentioned.
No, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
I didn't see
you
that.
You mentioned it, yeah.
That did look good.
You will like it if you watch it.
Okay.
And you can watch it with the kids.
It's on which service?
It is on Netflix right now. It is not a Netflix original, but it's on Netflix right now.
Is it one I want to run home and just watch? I bet it is. Like for Bryce to say that, that's code for
I think
you want to run right home right now and go.
You're gonna
want
to watch it, maybe with the kid. I'll be interested to see if the kids like it. But
Prospect, all right,
Prospect is good.
Oh, this is the Pedro Pascal one that looked awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, the one that's on my mind is the Stowaway one.
Oh yeah,
Martian in Reverse. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I know we got some YouTube comments. We got a YouTube comment from someone saying, well, that's just basically some other movie, except this thing is different. And,
yeah.
and I had
well,
to be like,
guess
well,
what?
That thing is different.
Did you like the first time they told the story? You'll probably like it the second time they
this
told
one has,
the story.
This has got,
I started to respond, there are no new ideas to any anytime somebody says that to me.
And to be honest, it's like everybody has their awakening at some moment. For me, it was Cars. Because, yes, Cars is straight up note-for-note Doc Hollywood. But you know what? Doc Hollywood was a fine movie when they told it with humans. Turns out it's even better with Pixar animation.
That's not about whether the idea is new. It's about did they execute it in a way that made you go, oh, that was a fun way to tell that story.
It's like imagine somebody started playing Amazing Grace and you're like, boo, heard it. You know, it's like, well, yes, no, I'm playing Amazing Grace. That's the song
I know. I've already heard all the words to this song already.
Let me guess, how sweet the sound? Boo.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like all songs, some are more repeatable than others. You know, it just depends.
Yeah.
That opening of Cars is pretty great, though.
Here in my car.
No.
The other one? A different one?
No, that's not it.
Stop talking.
Okay. I've been rewatching Next Generation. I moved on from Deep Space Nine to TNG because that's my easy watch where I'm like, don't need to think, you know I'm going to enjoy it. I have to say, I forgot how good TNG is.
Okay, hold on real quick. We're talking about the first season of TNG.
I'm in season two now, which I've always thought of as the worst season of TNG. And there's still some really good stories in that season.
So folks over at Red Letter Media, and these are people who love TNG. They force themselves to pick three good episodes from season one. Mm. And I believe Rich came up with 2.5. And Mike came up with 4.
I didn't engage in that exercise. Obviously I have different opinion than them, but I could come up with more than 3. I was shocked. I was like, I remember season one being rough. Remember season two being awful. And then season three, they really found their legs and got going, but there's some really, really good stories. Patrick Stewart has excellent acting, and I don't know, just having come off of watching all of Voyager, all of Deep Space Nine, I was expecting TNG not to wear as well because it's older. So maybe my expectations are different, but I was looking at it, I'm like, oh no, this is a great story. And it's definitely dated in production elements. Certainly there's some, you know, variation in the acting talents of the cast that they have for any given episode, right? Because they're always bringing in new people. But the stories in particular are the thing that I'm like, oh yeah, almost every story is solid.
There was something I had heard in some behind the scenes stuff, and this is almost certainly shaded by the way it was presented on the Red Letter Media review, but it's like they played a bunch of clips back to back where the actors, the production, the special effects team, they all sort of talked around like there were some conflicts. Yeah, there was some tension. There were some dust-ups. And it's like, between the lines, I was like, oh, man, it sounds like that first season was hell. produce.
There's definitely some stuff that even comes through because, of course, Denise Crosby leaves, right?
She chooses to leave. That's the most famous. Just kill me.
She is killed by a creature that is named after one of the producers, which I'm like, there's got to be more to that. They've said like, oh yeah, that creature was named, you know, as a joke on that. But I'm like, there's more to that.
Put air quotes around that joke.
Yeah.
That's great, man. So it does hold up, in knowing that you're getting into the best parts has to be awesome.
I'm pleasantly surprised. I was thinking I would be suffering a lot in those first two seasons episodes, and I'm enjoying them. And again, it's mostly the stories, sets, acting, shooting, you know, production values. It is what it is from the mid late 80s, and the budgets they had, but Patrick Stewart is amazing right from the beginning. And the story is sort of tight. Like these are good stories that would make good elements today.
So, non-spoilery, but, I think before the show we were talking about, Invincible and how, Bonnie unfortunately walked in on the one most graphic moment of the first 4 episodes. And so she was like, nope. And off she went. So me and my 13-year-old have been watching it. But we're watching it like as Bonnie's putting down Callie. And so all Bonnie knows the show as is me and Josie going, oh, wow. Holy cow. Yeah. And she's like, sounds really exciting. Not what I need at 8:30 at night.
It is kind of a bombastic show.
It's great, man. I love it.
Oh, you know, there's something that we didn't. This is not interesting.
No. If it's non-spoilery, we can.
It's not spoilery. The character, the female superhero
duplicate.
No. Adam. Adam Eve or what is her
yep. name? Her name's Adam Eve, but I'm infatuated with Duplicate. Like, how do you, her special ability and her comfort with what happens to other copies of her is very strange to me. It's really like that's fascinating.
I can tell that they're trying to do something with the Adam Eve character. That like her insignia is like
the female symbol with an X on it
over it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what the atom part of Adam Eve is.
Because I think she got her powers atomically.
Yeah, but why would you present as a powerful, empowered female and have your symbol be the female symbol with an X over it?
Right. I don't need the answer. If you looked up the answer, or if you're listening to this and you know the answer from the book, please don't tell us.
But I know like the same thing.
I don't know if they're trying to set up like this is like maybe a trans character or a non-binary character in some way. I did not escape my grasp that that Invincible's best friend is like gay and hitting like joking about Omni-Man being sexy.
Speaking of which, how did that part land with you? Because I really dug how little of a thing that was. I really dug that there was no wearing it on its sleeve, that it's like he might as well be the redheaded character or whatever.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. He's kind of a very small character. We just see him very early on. But I don't think that we've seen him much in the later of the four episodes that are out now.
So in other words, Brian, there's plenty of time for them to ruin this character. As best I can tell, we should all still be on guard.
I have noticed that he's the only character who wears a very deep V-neck. but no, I thought it was a cute moment to kind of have him hit on, or not hit on, but like,
or spell out.
Yeah.
The way he sees things.
That he's into Omni-Man.
No, I don't know. I hope they don't ruin it. And it never occurred to me that they would, but I dug, I don't know. I like the idea that what would have been shocking when I was my kid's age is not shocking at all. And I was like, just let it just breeze on by.
I think there's a balancing act when it comes to issues of representation in that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's a very good thing that, you know, that character, the best friend, is not like played up as a gay panic sort of spark, right? It's not like, ew, like it's not meant as something like that. It's a couple of clicks above tokenism. To a certain degree. It's like, okay, we got the character out and we let everyone know from the very first conversation that he's some form of queer. Thank you. And here is your heterosexual.
Well, they really haven't hammered us on that. Like it's almost like a Band-Aid that they just ripped off early on. Like, yeah, that's this character.
Well, they didn't make it unusual or put a hang up sign on it. They said they normalized. They're like, yeah, it's normal to have a friend who's gay. That's good. I think, Bryce, if I could throw this out there, we're kind of waiting for the other gay characters because they're, you know, in a real world, there's more than one.
Right. It's I think there's a balance in terms of tokenism, right? Like it's cool that we have it, and also it would be cool if there were more, right? Especially with with all the Lil Nas X stuff from the past few weeks, and seeing all of the tired old rhetoric around you know, an empowered queer man and using like satanic imagery and all. It's
fun fact. Today I learned Lil Nas X is queer.
He's very open about it.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little especially aware of that kind of stuff, right? Like, oh, well, it's fine, whatever you do in your relationship, but don't market it to kids. It's like, well, I'd like to show you the entirety of literature and all of the heterosexual stories that have taken up about half of all of recorded media.
It's interesting because Tom and I came up this might be above our pay grade, and anybody feel free to pull the ripcord on this, but Tom and I, when we were going to college, multiculturalism was on the upswing. And the idea that everybody should understand and embrace everybody else's culture, and that's great, was at the time, 18, 17, 19 years old or whatever, felt so heavy-handed, eye-rolling or whatever. But now, 20 years after, we got people coming after Paul Simon for using African beats in Graceland. And it's like, I thought that was kind of cool. That's how I learned about that other stuff. But now we're in this like, no, you all have identities.
That stuff is contextual to its time, right?
Correct.
When there are no African voices and Paul Simon finds traditional African musicians and brings them onto his album in the 80s, that's revolutionary because no one else is doing that and he's empowering them. In the context of the modern day, it feels like cultural appropriation.
I'll take that. Let me cash a check.
And would be, if you look at the history of
American music industry, and you're like,
name one time anyone has ever taken anything from Africa and treated it.
Last month read a book
called Alatsoe, where the main character is asexual. There is another character who's queer, and I think, if I'm remembering right, just gay, homosexual. And what was great about that is both those characters were important. Alatsoe, the asexual character, is the main character. Her best friend is a straight white boy, and the representation works there because you don't have any other ace characters, but she's the main character. So the story revolves around her. So getting back to Invincible, you're right, Brian. I love, because the reason I brought up Alatsoe is they never make a big deal about her being ace. That's just a fact of life. They breeze on by, and the story is about all these other things, right? And it comes up occasionally as everything comes up, but it's not, they don't hang a flag on it. The difference is she's the main character. Whereas our character in Invincible is a side character. And so it's as good as far as it goes, but going back to what you said, Bryce, it could feel like tokenism if there's every other character is heterosexual.
Yeah. That was one of the things that was surprising and I had forgotten about as WandaVision was airing, was like, oh yeah, the Young Avengers, which I love and features Wiccan the young Hulk, little Hulk, what's his name? Hulkling or whatever. And they're like in a gay relationship, and seeing them in WandaVision was like, oh well, maybe there's some space for that in Marvel, the biggest media franchise in the world right now. But we'll see, right? Because those characters have, or at least Billy has, a very tenuous connection to the physical plane at this point in time.
We'll see how that manifests in Doctor Strange. Probably is my guess.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's tough because to represent everyone statistically would mean that it's not an anything movie. You know what I mean?
No one's asking for that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that I recognize that. I don't want the tokenism. I don't want that.
It's a tricky thing that I never had to deal with growing up, but
once you've worked through it, it becomes less of an issue. But when there's only a few examples, that's when it's like, well, okay, let's have more examples. Then the one where there's only one character who's a side character who's gay doesn't stick out because there's plenty of other examples where that's
2021. It's not crazy.
Yeah, right.
Thing. So I don't know. That's why I put up, I watched Love, Simon when it came out a few years ago, which is fine.
Just put that on the poster. Somebody make me a poster of Love, Simon.
Corn killers.
With that quote. It's a fine one.
And I might have said as much at the time, but so Hulu.
You did. I did. Okay. Which is why I'm enjoying hearing it again.
And Hulu got the spin off, the Love, Victor show.
Right.
I don't know if I've I've aired my grievances about Love, Victor.
I got the impression you didn't love it.
I did not love it. Mainly because A, it's a series and they have filled a lot of the extra time you would have had stretching out a 90-minute movie into filling in a lot of, you know, supporting ensemble, most of whom are straight. And Victor, the main character, is like, and I think Victor is portrayed as bisexual, and so that's kind of its own different tricky wicket. But he is definitely interested in girls, like most of that show, and like it, you can do like I remember as it was coming out, and I was tweeting more about it. I was like, here are all of the important relationships in this show, and the gay one is like number sixth. It's like it's not even anywhere until the very end. And it's frustrating because I think that the bisexual experience is not mine to speak about, but it's frustrating.
You're just one of the two sides hating on him. That's what it is.
I don't want to get into that. It's very personal. But it's I'm sure it's difficult. I'm sure, especially for, you know, that being like a Hulu Disney thing, that there's a lot of writing by committee and whatnot. But it was hard to watch that and go, I can't. This just doesn't even feel like the thing. But it's the only thing. It's the only game in town. So that's why, like, Happiest Season that we watched? Like, that for being, you know, schlocky in the genre, was cute. I was glad to see it. I don't know. I know. Yeah.
The prosecution rests, Your Honor. I was not a fan.
Yeah.
Man, with that, I feel like we ought to wrap this up now that we solved the world.
There you go. You're welcome. All right, everybody. Thank you for being patrons. We will talk to you another time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.